Today's Tesho is on case 19 in the Mumonkan, the Umenkwan. Nonsense, ordinary mind is the way. Joshu asked Nansen, what is the way? Nansen replied, ordinary mind is the way. Joshu asked, shall I try to seek after it? Nansen responded, if you try for it, you will become separated from it. How can I know the way unless I tried? Persisted Joshu. Nansen said, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, you will find it as vast and boundless as outer space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? With these words, Joshu came to a sudden realization. Mumon's comment. Nansen dissolved and melted away before Joshu's question and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Joshu comes to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it. Mumon's verse, spring flowers, the autumn moon, summer breezes, winter snow. If useless things do not clutter your mind, you have the best days of your life. Well, here it is, day four. Boy, this is really sitting weather, you know? Sitting weather. Whew. I love it. I love it. Sit here and do zazen. Rain is pouring. Man, is that great or what? It's great, right? Wow. So helps, right? So easy to concentrate, you know? Just great. Beautiful. Beautiful. So, today's koan is Joshu asked Nansen. Now, Joshu and Nansen are like, really existed. They really were legendary teacher and student. And Joshu had a Kensho experience when he was only like 19 years old. Now, some people here have had Kensho experiences at this sashin. A Kensho experience might be something like this. You know, you're having a terrible sit and another terrible sit and another terrible sit, and you have pain in your legs and pain in your legs and pain in your back, and etc. And you're thinking, oh man, I'll never do this. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start watching your breath and boom. You know, you enter this great serenity. Your pain seems to disappear or move to the margins. And 25 minutes like that, you know. You think, what the heck was that? You know, and that's a Kensho. It's like an opening into fundamental reality. Normally, we feel very acutely our sense of separation from everything around us. You know, one manifestation of that is pain in our legs. You know, I mean, to be alive is often to just feel like you're inhabiting your body. Like I'm stuck in this body, and it's heavy, and it doesn't do what I want, and I'm dragging this body around, and I'm stuck on this earth, right? and that it's too hot or it's too cold, and et cetera, et cetera. This is like, this is called the dualistic awareness. So we're always looking at the world as separate from ourselves, and we even look at ourselves as separate from ourselves, right? Society really trains us to do this, right? We look at other things as objects, you know, that are sort of almost like lifeless objects that we, you know, don't see as part of ourselves, and we even begin to look at ourselves as objects. It's just the way it goes. So this is dualistic awareness. And people encourage this for various reasons. I mean, if they can get you to be very obsessed with your appearance, or very dissatisfied with your appearance or your life in some way, they can sell you all kinds of products. So we have a whole system based on dualistic consciousness. But every once in a while we're sitting on the cushion, and it can heighten our sense of dualistic consciousness a little bit, you know. If your cushion is too low, you get pain in your lower back. If it's too high, you get pain in your knees. If you put a pad under one knee, it will eventually create a pain in the hip. This is like physics, right? There's no escaping this, you know. There's actually no totally comfortable position, probably. You know? And so you're sitting on the cushion and you feel this sense of, like, you know, separation. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. But every once in a while, boom, everything, all that sense of separation disappears, and it's just like wonderful. You know, people have these sits, they might even just be a few minutes, or even a very brief period, but boom. It's like all of a sudden all of that's gone, and you just feel like you're in the flow, or you're in harmony with everything around you. You know, and this deep sense of connectedness or unity. This is Kensho. See? And some people think basically that Zen practice is like you're totally ignorant, and then you have an enlightenment experience, and then you're totally aware. But it's not like that. As we practice Zen, we have Kensho experiences. If we practice diligently, we have Kensho experiences on and on and on and on and on. And they get deeper and deeper. You know, it's not deeper, 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 deeper. It's more like deep, shallow, deep, deeper, shallow, deep. You know. So it's not like a nice, neat line. Nothing in life is like that. It's like a fractal, you know. It goes this way and that way, but it's going somewhere, right? And as it unfolds, you see the design. So anyway, Joshu had his first Kensho when he was 19 years old. Now, if he had been an American, he would probably have set himself up as a teacher and produced a series of tapes that you can buy, right, called Be Here Now by Joshu Shifu. Right, and he'd go marketing his tapes, and he'd sell them at New Age fairs and stuff like that. But he didn't do that. Strangely, he said, "Gosh, you know, that's really amazing. I'd like to have more of those Kensho experiences. I wonder where I could deepen my practice." And somebody said, "Have you heard of Master Nansen?" So Joshu went to study with Nansen, and they studied together for many, many, many years until Nansen died. And Joshu went on to become maybe one of the greatest Zen masters of the Tang Dynasty, really deeply awakened person. So this koan takes place in the earlier phase of their relationship. Joshua asked Nansen, "What is the way?" Nansen replied, "Ordinary mind is the way." He could have said, "Natural mind is the way." Nansen replied, "Shall I try to seek after it?" And Joshua asked. And then Nansen said, "Oh, if you the harder you try, the more separate you become from it." See. And then Joshua said, "Well, how can I enter it unless I try? And how can I ever know enlightenment unless I try?" And Nansen said, "Look, it's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. That's a small mind. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is confusion." See, that's interesting because we think we're supposed to know Zen, you know, it's just to understand this. We think understanding is so important to have like a, but understanding is really always a distortion of reality. You know, when we understand something, we have a theory, or we have a term, or we have a mental image of how things should be. And the reality is never that way. You know, and when you get to very sophisticated people, they know this. You know, like physicists. You know, I was reading something the other day. You know, when I took a course in physics in high school, they showed the structure of the atom, and the atoms were like a bunch of little, like a planet. And the electrons going around the atom were like little spaceships flying around. And I'm told that actually that's totally wrong, you know, that the electrons don't look like little spaceships flying around the Earth. That's just a representation. And somebody was telling me that really electrons are more like clouds. And I couldn't get my mind around that. And I was reading this physicist named Richard Feynman, and he was saying that actually sometimes atomic particles and subatomic particles do such strange things that a particle at this end of the universe can affect a particle at the other end of the universe, and they don't know how, but they do seem to affect each other. And the physicists sometimes have a sense of humor, and the physicists call this spooky action at a distance. Isn't that great? Because they don't know what the heck it's about, right? And they said that like especially the electron over here has some effect on the electron over here. And you think, well, how can that be? Because I thought electrons were like little spaceships going around the Earth, you know, going beep, 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 like, but they aren't. And Feynman said maybe all these electrons respond together because really there's just one big electron. You know, and when the average person reads this in the paper, you know, they just think, you know, the average person just thinks, oh, those physicists are just a bunch of idiots. You know, they don't really, none of this is real. You know, and real is like my car. You know, that's real. You know, I know gas is $2.85 a gallon. You know, that's reality. But the strange thing is, you know, actually, in the winter, you get less gas when you buy a gallon of gas. Did you know that? And the gas companies know that. Isn't that interesting? They sell you less gas because the gas expands, right? And they actually make a lot more money in the winter than in the summer. I thought that was fascinating, you know. So what is a gallon anyway? See? It's not so real, you know? The point is that all of our conceptual frameworks are not just baloney, but they are arbitrary to some degree, right? They really don't get at the reality. The reality is usually more complicated than our language can express, see? So Nansen says, you know, it's not so important to understand. We can only understand very imperfectly. The point of Zen practice is to overcome the distance between ourselves and the world. See, that's what this is all about. Understanding can actually increase our sense of distance from the world, right? This is why it's so difficult for scientists to make new discoveries, right? Part of it is that they have all these assumptions that they have to work against, right? So you know, it's not just that people go out and look at the world. I mean, you have to ask yourself, you know, people didn't know about germs until quite recently, or even contagious disease, you know. And you think, well, we've been on Earth for at least 100,000 years as human beings. Why did it take us so long? And it wasn't just that, you know, these things are microscopic and we couldn't see them, because you would think that you would have figured it out, you know. But a lot of it has to do with, you know, we have all these ideas that get in the way. They don't let us see what's right in front of us. You know, they just don't let us see. We have all these assumptions and prejudices about how things are supposed to be. You know, it's very hard to break free from the power of context and upbringing and assumption, you know. This is why Zen practice is so challenging, you know, because, you know, we have all these assumptions about what real is, all these ideas, and they prevent us from dissolving the barrier between ourselves and the world. In fact, the more uncertain we become, or more in pain we are in, the greater the pain we're in, or, you know, we tend to cling even more relentlessly to our beliefs, you know, and our ideas. And that just intensifies our sense of distance from the world. My mother had Alzheimer's disease, and my sister is obsessed now with Alzheimer's disease. You know, she's terrified she's going to get it, and that I'm going to get it. And I'm supposed to be taking. I actually do. You know, I'm supposed to be taking ginkgo every day now. You know, and so we'll see if it works. You know. But she sent me this thing in the email, you know. It was so funny. It's supposed to be an Alzheimer's test. I think it's baloney, you know. But I thought it was great. So here's some questions. Okay. Right. Number one, what do you put in a toaster? Obvious, toast, right? What do you put in a toaster? Toast, of course, right? Mm-mm. No, bread. Bread. See, isn't that interesting? What do you put in the toaster? Toast. I'm okay. Not so fast. You put bread in the toaster, don't you? Okay. Say silk 5 times. Ready? Just mentally. Silk, 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 silk. Now spell silk. S-I-L-K. Okay. What do cows drink? Milk. No. They drink water. They drink water. Isn't that interesting? I thought that was great. You know? It's the power. It's not about Alzheimer's, right? It's about the power of context, right? And assumptions, you know? But there was. Here's a better one, or another one. Maybe these didn't get you, but. Okay. Here's one. It's 20 years ago, and a plane is flying at 20,000 feet over Germany. If you will recall, Germany at that time was politically divided into West Germany and East Germany. Anyway, during the flight, 2 engines fail. The pilot, realizing that the last remaining engine is also failing, decides on a crash landing procedure. Unfortunately, the engine fails before he can do so, and the plane fatally crashes smack into the middle of no man's land between East Germany and West Germany. Where would you bury the survivors? East Germany, West Germany, or no man's land? See? Of course, you don't bury the survivors. Right? I just thought these were great. You know, anyway, we can go on and on. Maybe I do have Alzheimer's. But, you know, this is the power of context, right? The power of upbringing, the power of assumptions, And a lot of Zen practice is trying to break through this these assumptions about how reality is. And really, these assumptions keep us from accomplishing our mission in Zen, which is to dissolve the barrier between ourselves and the world, which we have created, and to realize a natural way of life. Yeah, this is really all about, you know, humans have elaborate fantasies about being separate from the world. Elaborate, you know, we're terrified of the world, but it's very clear, isn't it, that we really did evolve on this planet. You know, it's pretty obvious. We look like monkeys, you know, we do, you have to admit, and we have a lot of primate behavior patterns, right? You know, I mean, it's pretty clear, you know, this world is our home, at least in natural terms, you know. And yet humans are, you know, one of the first things you find in the development of culture is creating a boundary between your humans and animals. Very important. This is very, very important in many societies. And in fact, an insult is to say, oh, you're behaving like an animal. And even though humans do things that would make animals weep with shame, right, we still have this prejudice against animals, you know. But the truth is, this is all these are all illusions, you know. This world is our home, and you don't need science to tell you. If you just sit on the cushion and you watch your breath, you know, little by little, your fears go away and your assumptions go away. And you begin to experience just how wonderful it is to be here, you know, just how really wonderful. But you can't make it happen, you know. You can't make it happen. You just have to clear away your illusions, you know. Don't try to understand whatever you do, right? What does Nansen say? He says, knowing is delusion. Not knowing is confusion. So you either can be confused, or you can simply have created all these fantasies. So don't go either way, he says. What you want to do is to dissolve the barrier between yourself and the world. He says, when you have really reached the great way beyond doubt, you will find it vast and boundless. No boundaries are seen, see? This is when the boundary between yourself and the world goes away, everything in the world becomes your true self. This is what Zen practice is all about. And, you know, you can say, you know, I've been practicing for 5 years, when am I ever going to have enlightenment? Great enlightenment. But it doesn't matter when you have your great enlightenment, because that doesn't end your practice, you know? Mumon's comment is very famous in Zen circles. Nansen dissolved and melted away before Joshi's questions. That means that Nansen was deeply awake in his response. In Zen, insult or negative language are often used as praise. So there's a koan where a teacher says, "You empty-headed fool!" See, and that's high praise, see? Because it means you're not clinging to ideas. It sounds to an outsider like an insult. So they say Nansen melted away before Joshu's question, meaning he responded very skillfully. Even though Joshu, in this little story, comes to a Kensho, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it. Well, of course, you can never understand it. We just said understanding wasn't real. But there's no end to the dissolving of boundaries. See, there's no end. And this could be the source of unhappiness, or it could be the source of happiness, depending on the kind of life you want to live. See. So, I mean, it can be very frustrating if you're, say, working with the Mu Koan. You know, because you're sitting on the cushion, and you're supposed to say moo until you run out of breath. And at the end of your breath, your mind should be blank and dark. See? And then you say moo, and then at the end of your breath, your mind is blank and dark. And then you have to come in and see me in the Dokusan room, and you have to go moo or something, right? And I'm waiting to hear. I'm waiting to hear the boundary between yourself and the world disappear. See? It's very frustrating because you can be in blank mind, and that boundary can still be there for a long time. Yeah. It can still be there. And also, you can come into Dokusan, and as soon as you come into the Dokusan room, you think, you become very self-conscious. The boundary becomes even more pronounced, even more dramatic. So, you know, when you walk into the Dokusan room, instead of feeling natural and at ease, you feel unnatural and ill at ease, right? And it makes it even harder to be natural. So, you know, I'm saying all this, which might be obvious, just so you know, you know, okay? I mean, I didn't think it was going to be comfortable, you know. And please don't think I wasn't there, you know, because I was. You know, sometimes I would go in to see Genki Roshi, and I would go in thinking, all right, I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to scream moo. And I would get in there, and I literally couldn't open my mouth. I remember going to one whole session, and everybody was going in going, moo! It was like opera singers, you know? And I, moo! Moo! So I went in there, and I literally couldn't open my mouth, because I just thought, this is bullshit, you know? This is bullshit. And it would have been bullshit. I wanted it to come out of my true nature, yeah? I wanted it to come out of my true nature. I knew I wasn't there yet. And how did I know? Because I was, I felt distanced from everything around me. Yeah. And actually, the time eventually came when I didn't go to Dokusan for a number of sessions, because I just knew I wasn't ready. You know, I wasn't ready, and I just wouldn't go to Dokusan, and I would see Genki Roshi and. He was perfectly friendly. I mean, and how come he wasn't mad at me? Well, he'd been there. You know, he had been there. We all understand that this is difficult. But it takes time to have a deep encounter with our true nature. Yeah? And good things are worth waiting for, right? I mean, we could do this whole session differently, you know. We could get up at 8 o'clock, or we'd have breakfast at 8, right? So get up when you like, breakfast at 8, 9 o'clock will be seminars, you know. We'll do some sitting, we'll do a little sitting, and we'll have the seminar. We'll all get in a circle, put the chairs in a circle, you know, this sort of thing. What do you think? You know, what do you think? Well, you know, we could do it like that. You know. But it would be bullshit, right? But you know it would, right? So all of us have had contact with our true nature. You know, if we hadn't, this wouldn't even make any sense at all. We've all had moments where the boundary between ourselves and the world disappears, and we feel so alive, right? And so wonderful. And, you know, basically, at that moment, the self, so-called, ceases to exist, right? That the I is gone, and the world is present, right? And we've all had those moments, but we've been taught to play this game, you know, to be curt. You know, I'm supposed to be curt, you know, that means this, this, and this, you know. I'm supposed to do this, and say this, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And those lessons are drilled into our head from the time we're even aware of anything. So it's very difficult to overcome them. But if you just keep dwelling in empty, the other day I said you have to eat and emptiness, morning, noon, and night. And if you do this, you turn into a dragon, you know? You do. You turn into a different kind of being. And it's great, you know, in Chinese mythology, dragons live up in the clouds, you know, and then they go down to the bottom of the ocean. So in other words, high and low, you know, they can go to the highest heavens or they can go to the deepest depths. They're at home in the clouds, they're at home in the rain, they're at home in the water, they're at home in the dirt. You know, that's a wonderful way to be, right? This is our home. This world is our beautiful home. And we're so afraid, you know. But if you eat emptiness morning, noon, and night, to say you become a dragon is kind of wrong. You always have been one, you know. Humans are like marvelous beings who are taught that they're unworthy of their existence, you know. And then they go through their whole lives trying to prove their worthiness to them, to their poor selves, their poor, unhappy selves, yeah. So it's like dragons all have to go to school and be told, you're really just a little lap dog, you know. Not that I'm against lap dogs, you know. But they have to be housebroken, bad dog, bad little dog, you know. And after a while, the poor dragon's going around going, am I barking too loud, you know? Should I ask for more kibble, you know? But really, you know, it's absurd, right? You know, they should just fly up into the heavens and down into the sea, you know, and what do their dragon things, you know? that's what this is all about. You know, we're convinced that we are unworthy of our existence. You know, and so just don't worry. Do your best. Practice with diligence, and just enter Muxin. You know, just be in Muxin. Just be in Muxin. Muxin, a blank mind, blank mind, blank mind. And that's it. You know, that's the path. It might take you 20 years to answer the Mukhoan, and you might say, well, that stinks. You know, that stinks. But why is it so important to answer it, you know? I mean, in other words, what's the hurry? You know, what's your hurry? What's the, you know, do you have another gig after Zen, you know? You know, you have something else, Tibetan. After this, it's Tibetan, right? After enlightenment, something else. I've got another gig lined up, you know? It's like, what's the hurry, you know? I mean, basically, this is about being true, you know, you either love it or you don't, right? It's that simple. You know, one of the participants in our sesshin left this morning. And let me just say that a number of people in this room have left sesshin before, you know. So, leaving sesshin is not a terrible thing. You know, when and after I say that, everybody leaves, you know. when I was, this person actually came in, I don't think this person would mind my saying that, you know, this person was dropping hints that the prospect of leaving was very tempting, you know. And finally, you know, on the third night, the person let me know that, you know, it was didn't say, I'm thinking of leaving, more like, you know, I've had thoughts of leaving, even though I would never act on them, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember I was at a sesshin where Genki Roshi, one of my first sesshin, a guy left a sesshin, or was thinking of leaving sesshin. And Genki Roshi, during one of his teishos, he very, very heavy, you know, very heavy tone, he said, I know somebody is thinking of leaving, but where would you go? So you couldn't run. Far enough. See, I think, I love Genki Roshi, but I think that's wrong. You know, I think that's totally wrong. This person sort of said, you know, I've been thinking of leaving, and I said, well, if you'd like to go, please go. And I said, don't get me wrong, I'm not telling you to go. You know, there's not a subtext here, like, get out of here. What I'm saying is, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. It's okay. And I said, you know, if you leave here, first of all, I won't stop liking you, you know. I won't stop liking you. If I see you on the street, I'm going to go, ah, you traitor. You traitor. You know, I have to tell you the truth. You know, religions can be really a pain in the ass, right? I mean, you have to admit, there's an element of religion which is very slimy, right? You know, religions all the time use spiritual blackmail. Have you noticed this? It's like, if you walk out on, you know, if you don't believe in so-and-so, you're going to hell. There's no other way except, you know, if you don't believe in, you know, so-and-so, hell, it's hell for you, you know. That's spiritual blackmail. You know, it's just totally slimy. And it's a lie, right? It's a lie, first of all. But it's in some religions, you can't even leave. It's against the law to leave the religion you were born in. And I just think that's preposterous. You know, it's like, so, I told him, if you leave here, you won't, this person was afraid, you know, like, well then, I guess I have to go home, if I leave here, I have to go home and throw all my Buddha statues in the garbage. And I said, why would you do that? You know, I said, you can if you want, you know. You could sell them at the yard sale. Why throw them away? You know, sell them at the yard sale, you know. And the point is, you don't have to stop. If you believe this, you don't have to stop believing in it. But, you know, Zen isn't really about belief anyway, you know. So the point is, I said, I won't be mad at you. You know, the gods won't be mad at you. God, I was reading in the paper the other day, do you know that, like, more than 60% of Americans think God is angry? I have to be honest, I think that's madness. It's very dangerous, and it's so sad, isn't it? You know? So I said, God isn't going to be mad at you, you know? I'm not going to be mad at you. You're not going to become a worse person. You know, you're not going to hell. This is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I said, so, you know, if you're here and because you want to be here, wonderful. And if you want to just come and practice once a week at the university, wonderful. You know, Zen is about natural life. It's about being natural, it's free. Being free, see. So when we dissolve the boundary between ourselves and the world, we're free. We're natural. We can go up to heaven and go down to the bottom of the sea. I think this is a wonderful way to live. And I meant it when I said to this person, you know, if you leave here, God isn't, first of all, don't accept that term, but, you know, God isn't angry. What kind of a universe would it be where, you know, the universe is angry at people all the time for making mistakes? You know, what kind of a parent would be mad at his kid all the time if he made mistakes? You know, how are you supposed to learn? So you know, anyway, there's nothing wrong with leaving if you're not enjoying yourself, right? Now, enjoying yourself is complex, in my opinion. Yeah. Because some things are harder to achieve than others, right? So, you know, I was reading this, I was reading that when Georgia O'Keeffe and Stieglitz were living together in upstate New York, honing their art, they went on to become, Stieglitz went on to become like the really leader of modern photography, and Georgia O'Keeffe became, I think, the greatest American painter in the 20th century. They lived up in Lake George, and they painted and worked on their photographs 16 hours a day. Right? So it's like, get up, have breakfast, start painting. Have lunch, go for a walk, paint, 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 right? In the dark room, 16 hours a day, right? And she loved it. But that's how she became Georgia O'Keeffe. Now, if you said, you know, how's it going, Georgia? She might say, oh, brother, you know, I can't get these flowers to sit up there in the sky. You know, they just don't look convincing up there. Or this skeleton, this head, this cow's head, I can't paint it right, you know. She must have had days like that, many. She must have been days where you just put the brushes aside and you say, oh, it's not clicking today, but I've got to keep trying. I remember reading this article. It was an interview with Giacometti, a sculptor I adore. And it was a day with Giacometti, and this guy had gone, Giacometti went through his routine, and, you know, he's an artist, so he doesn't get up at 4:30 in the morning, you know, but he gets up and he goes and has his coffee and does his rounds, and then he goes into the studio and he has all these clay models covered in wet canvas to keep them moist. And he would uncover one and he'd look at it and just go, like, not today, you know, and he'd cover it up again. And some days we'd just be like that, you know, he'd take you off the wraps and just look and go, you know, cover it up. But, you know, then the next day he'd come in and he'd take off the wraps and then he'd take his implements and just the clay would be flying, and he'd work for like 10 hours, right, drinking cappuccinos, right? And so, you know, it's just like the lightning would strike. Now, if you ask Giacometti, you know, how's it going, Giacometti? He might say, oh. You know, that's what it means to have a challenging, to lead a challenging life and have a high goal. In my opinion, enlightenment is a very lofty goal, you know, very, very challenging goal. And I don't think Zen is for everybody. You know, it's just not. I mean, it's not everybody's cup of tea. Not everybody likes to be this challenged, you know. But, you know, it does happen, though, that people leave here and they come back. And they realize, oh, I do want this challenge, you know. And because, you know, they realize, actually, even though my legs hurt, and even though I'm tired, and even though I have indigestion, and even though I'm sick, you know, somehow this is my natural way. I feel very alive when I do this, you know. I feel very alive. And there are such people in the world, you know what I mean? And they come to Sesshin. So the beautiful is difficult, you know, actually, that's true. So this is challenging, but the stakes are very high. I mean, you know, these are the highest stakes. The fundamental problem with humans is that they are feel separate from the world that created them, and that they are helping to create or destroy. And so, you know, basically that's the problem. The problem is that separation. So it's a big, we're taking on like the biggest problem. And Zen is like, this is a little bit like physics, really. I mean, this is like, you know, I don't mean to sound terrible about this, but, you know, a lot of Tibetan Buddhism is like, go in and worship the statue, you know, and light some incense and this sort of stuff. And that's wonderful. I'm not criticizing that. Some people just, that's enough, you know. But, you know, Zen people don't want to just look at images of the Buddha, right? Want to realize Buddha, see, in this life. So it's a very lofty goal, very lofty goal. And it requires a lot of pain in the legs, tiredness, and so on. And so, if this is your thing, don't get discouraged, you know. But you know, even when you're frustrated, you know, you do things. I write. I'm not a great writer. In fact, some people say I'm a terrible writer, you know. Some people who have reviewed my work say I'm a terrible writer. But you know, I don't care what they think, you know, because there is a part of me that has to, writing is not the most important thing I do. Zen is the most. But I, when I write, I, you know, something turns on, something becomes bright in my life, you know. And my wife doesn't sit because this is about freedom, right? It's about freedom. People say, I meet people and they go, how come your wife doesn't sit? Your own wife? I said, what am I supposed to do? Drag her in here, you know? This is not, I should say, you don't sit, you're coming back as a dog, you know? A homeless dog, you know? It'll be terrible for you if you don't sit, you know? That's a religion, right? It's like, how disgraceful. This is about freedom. You know, it's about, if my wife doesn't want to sit, don't sit. But when she gardens, you know, she gardens all day. And she isn't going to have a dikensho by gardening. That's the truth. But her path, her passion, her you know, she feels alive when she works with living things. So I respect that. I feel most alive sitting here sweating in my robe and watching my watch. Yeah. So, anyway, we have beautiful sitting weather. So let's really practice. Okay.